Welcome back to another episode of the Jennifer Caress Horror Podcast. This week we have a visiting writer. His name is Lauren Centero, and he has contributed his very creepy story, So Many Tiny Mouths. Oh, you're really going to enjoy this one. And afterwards, he explains what inspired this story, and that itself is a very interesting tale to listen to. So do stick around, and thanks for listening. I'll talk to you guys later. Next time, actually, what we're going to do is I'm going to give you the first chapter of my newest book, Blood of the Broken, and we're bringing Iliad Strange back to introduce and close the story, so you'll definitely want to come back for that. I will talk to you guys later. Ciao, baby. I can't believe I just said that.
So Many Tiny Mouths by Lawrence Santoro. When the wind freshened, the mouths climbed the sky, played among the trees. Earl Suey wrote, "They eat top down, well as bottom up, don't matter none." Earl sat in his shack, writing down, like always, like once, like long ago, when he was barely a coot, back when the government claimed men were going to the moon, the whole damn world snackered by that bullshit. Cap Haney, too. Earl saved that newspaper. Still, he had the damn thing somewhere. That was years ago, and Earl was writing even then. Now Earl watched the dark creep. The sand drifted, rolling in dog-high waves around his shack. "Damned by sand and dark," he wrote. "Forever dark coming." Didn't matter, he figured. Figured the damn mouths couldn't see. "Even though they got one of my eyes," he swigged a little beam and added, "ha, ha." His eye hole itched and hurt at the same time. So many mouths, even blind. All they had to do was open and bite. Bite so quick, so often, something would be there by and by, something to eat. "Blind mouths against a half-blind man makes an even fight," he wrote on the Toms River Sentinel. "Even," he said to no one, laughing, "even nothing, when the end is sure." He wrote that down. Earl always wrote things down. Well, sometimes he didn't. But he had years of sentinels saved to write on, marking over the damn gray print lies with black crayon, his wide lines of truth. "Always something gotta kill you," he wrote over a story about the president and water someplace. "Now there's a truth in that damn paper," he said, and swigged again. He listened. The air clacked, clicked, hissed. A dry rain of sand sifted over the shack's tin roof when the wind died. When it blew, it scoured roof, walls, everything. "Gobble, hobble, hobble, bobble," he said, when the sand brushed the window. "Sweet nothings," he said. "Sand making love whispers to the glass." Soon his windows were gone. "Turned," he wrote. "All my winder glass turned to sand." He wrapped the plastic tarp around him tighter, hugged the bottle of beam closer to him. He wrote, "The noises in the air where they eat are..." He listened to catch the sound, and then by and by he wrote, "The sound like something, not squirrel, scratching louder in under the eaves. That's its eatin' noises." Then, putting on paper the sounds in the air, "Nick, nick, nick, nick," he wrote. "A million nicks is night tonight." There were no squirrels now. "No squirrels in the barrens," he wrote. "Pretty soon no barrens, and then no squirrel everywhere." That was an afterthought. "Couldn't do without squirrel anyways." The air was cool, and his breath dripped down inside the plastic he'd wrapped round himself. "That cold day in July everyone talks of," he wrote. "Ha, ha." The mouths had come with the 4th of July. He wrote, "Everyone missed the end of the world." And then he added, Cap Haney, Buster Leak, too. Too much fun, I guess. Howling at the moon. The moon. There had been a picture. Made him laugh. He'd cut it from the Sentinel years ago. He showed it around over by Chatsworth. The damn picture had the astronauts standing on the moon in their suits. And there it was, the damn moon in the sky of the damn picture. Now, how can they be on the moon when the moon's in the sky there, he said. You answer me that. Folks, real folks, they just shook their heads. Good catch, Earl, they said. Cap Haney, he looked. Damn, Earl, he said. That's them practicing in their spacesuits there. They're out in the desert. You see, it says them astronauts practicing for when they are on the moon, for crying out loud. Sure, that's the moon in the picture. That's where they're heading. Christ, Earl, it says right there. Earl, he shook his head and saved the damn picture. If they're on the moon, how can the moon be in their sky? He wrote it. Still, made him laugh. Cap Haney. The end of the world started with the folks from Philadelphia. The family stopped on the day, 4th of July itself, canoe strapped to their roof and lost. They bought a couple 5 gallons of gas from his dipping barrel, and he'd pointed their way to Papoose Creek. Earl's old hunter dog had ignored them. When their car had come crunching up the sand trail off the county road, the old bastard raised his head and sang a squeaky bass roof. And when the car stopped, he growled, and when he saw their faces, he just fell asleep, farting. The young dog was off on the causeway in the wood. He didn't bother homing to see what the hell was up with these folk. "Help us with a little gas there, can you?" the driver called. "Service station's closed over in, the man turned to the little woman. Chatsworth, was it? The woman bent to the map, crinkled in her lap. "Buster Leak, too goddamn rich to work holidays," Earl said. He squinted at the car folk. "Yeah, us Pineys, we gotta take our fun, too, you know." A ton of plastic camp shit. Forget map or sense, these folks were good and lost. Daddy's sausage hands were sweat tight on the wheel. Pretty fingernails. Shiny. "We're looking for, is it the Wading River?" "Yeah, the Wading." "And it's the Papoose Creek," Daddy said it like he didn't want to say it. You heard of Papoose Creek?" The woman leaned over to look at Earl. A white strip of sun grease ran like war paint down her nose. She yelled slow, like talking to a damn Mexican. "We hear about Jersey's Pine Barrens in Philadelphia. There is so much history here." She clicked her tongue. "We want the kids to see before, you know, we want them to see the pines before..."
"Yeah, before Cap Haney cuts them down, rolls out them little bitty houses here to sell," Earl said.
The lady smiled. The kids sulked in the back seat, looking nowhere. Earl started. He gave him shit for a little spuntails, charged a pretty penny for the gas. Penny? Hell, Earl charged what they call an arm and leg for a short 5 gallons of Dewey low test because Buster closed the Baron's shell for independence. Son of a bitch, he was good for something. After dipping and shitting him, Earl pointed them to Papoose Creek. "Now that Papoose bottom water, that is good for what ails you," he winked at the man. "It makes you strong, if you know what I mean." And then he looked at the woman. She snapped a picture of Earl with her little yellow camera box from the store. They paid, and they were gone, like that. Earl was going to tell them, "Watch out for that Jersey devil now. He carries off folk in the night, his 100 teeth like needles clacking." He'd written down that story years before. He could have warned them to watch their damn campfire, for Christ's sake. Could have said, "It might look swampy wet out there, but it ain't.
dry for Christ knows how long. I don't want my shack and me burned through your careless ways. I built this myself. Oh, Christ, now, I built it back when Cap Haney was a little shit back in the damn Depression. I've been here that long. Cap getting richer, me getting older. He would have told them about Cap, his damn bogs, the nigger day laborers he's jobbed in the seasons. But the damn people, they just... The damn people drove off. The car kicked a rooster tail of sand as it slewed onto the trail and into the pines. The old dog slept. Earl laughed. Then he kept watch through the back window. Evening on, Earl leaned against the glass, looking toward the creek, watching for sparks, the telltale glow of run-wild flame in the sky above the forest. Night sneaked from under the trees, across the sand, between him and the woods. Tree shadow touched his wall, and dark crawled over him and onto the shack, over Haney's bogs. Then night was everywhere. Night stayed day hot. The sky was pale and watery. Of course, that could have been his damn eyes. Still, all he saw of earth and heaven that last night of the world was the forest and a few stars wiggling in heat. That and the thing. If there had been no folk in the woods, Earl would have sat his porch, taken the breeze off Haney's bogs. He would have rocked, listening to the crick crack and the buzz of bugs and the wing moan of swallows as they fed. He could have sat breathing pinewood scent through his own, and the dog's stinks, those familiar reeks mixed with the nearby whiff of frog, toad, decaying water life bubbling up from the bogs and the faraway mossy sphagnum breath of cedar swamp steeping in the deep wood. He could have had a good night, July the 4th, gone to bed and died stupid like the world was going to. He didn't. He was watching out that damn bunch in the woods, and because he was, he saw the thing. He saw it come, almost burned his eyes out white, like sunlight screaming its set black shadows climbing the insides of his shack. He heard the coming thing fry the air, felt it whomp the ground. For seconds, the shack shivered on its stone posts. The wind sucked out of him, then deep thunder boxed his ears. The damn air punched his chest a second later and rolled across him, wiggled the flab of his face. The old hunter dog went standing, suddenly wild, looking around, singing. "I best write that down." "What do you say?" Earl said, and he wrote. "Stars shooting back," he wrote. "Fourth July... The stars shoot back. A big come. A big come." He figured the Philly folk were gone. Found later he was wrong about that. Figured the thing had whomped down by Ong's Hat Cross, where the Ford sisters had their shack. That was that for them, he figured. It was too bad, too. He liked those Ford girls. Earl ran outside to look for fire sign. Nothing but the glowing wake across the sky. He listened for the fire trucks to come, shouting out of Chatsworth. Nothing. "Too much Independence fund," he figured. "All your money, Cap Haney, and you don't even care about... It took him a half minute. "You don't even care about them poor people," he figured out loud. In a few minutes, the trail of the fallen star was a blue smear down the sky. After a good half hour, there were still no trucks, no men. "Well, up to me," he said. He waddled the 100 feet from his shack to the woods, not to it normally, but tonight it was an uphill mile. Hell, a hard 2 mile. Each step sank him to his ankles. Each step he shoved backward in giving earth. It was like wading through a running tide. The black forest wall rose ahead, rose and whispered.
He had never been afraid. Not ever. Not of critter, woods, nor night. Little shit and grown man Earl Suey was pine-born and fearless. Now, the forest was a stranger. The wood whispered unfriendly in a tongue he'd never heard. What was different? Something changed, but what the hell, he didn't know. He'd write down when he did. 20 steps into the forest, and the trees folded shut behind. The world, Shack, Boggs, and Chatsworth, all was gone. Now it was him and the sand sweeping his feet. Overhead, the pine boughs were black fingers against the blue ghost light of the stars' trail. Even that soft light was spreading into the big night. Out of the forest came a ripple. Something breathed across him, and the world rumbled, rising and sinking like a John boat riding a tidal swell. Earl's toes tried to grip the sand through his boots. Night's breath was cold. It was bad. A smell he didn't like wrapped him. From down the trail, a scream squeaked his ears. Wasn't man nor woman, no animal he'd heard, not even being eaten, living, made that noise. Something, though, something, clamped in pain, was down ahead, dying. He tried to grab hold, remember the noise, the stink, for writing down later. Too much new was happening, though. The path to Papoose Creek, a way he'd walked since the Great Depression, had become something else. Night's heat was gone. Christ, he should have brought his damn lamp. No sooner had it washed him, though, than the stink, the sound, was gone. When a branch he should have known bit his ankle, when reach creepers damn near snared his legs, when a heaved root nearly tumbled him onto the bog wash, he stopped dead. Chill sweat covered him. He heard it then, and this time he could not forget. He hadn't run since he was a boy. Men didn't run. He ran. It stayed. It followed him. Back to his shack. His hair stood wet with damp and chills. It climbed his bones. He scribbled down. Black sky, he added. Black forever. Everywhere. Everywhere. Something different. That was something he felt that was true, but he didn't know why. And then he did. The difference is, it is different, he wrote that down. Before, everything was all the same forever. Trees, paths, places, all directions the same. Now, not. Now, all is different. From his back window, he looked at the black forest, at the white sand path that led there. Everywhere was difference. Everywhere he listened. And he listened to the night. Even silence had a stranger's voice, and from the pines came the noises where the silence ate. He woke when something thumped the shack's ass end. The glass he leaned on bumped his head. Outside, day was bright. It wasn't hard sun, but fuzzy bright. Fog had come while he slept, and the shack was wrapped in gray. Another something whomped the wall. He laid his hand against cool glass. The fog on the pane shoved back. His hand shook. I can't see shit, he told the old dog. The hand he pressed to the glass was veined, red and blue, thick-skinned, crossed with scars and stories. That was the same. At least that. The nails were yellowed, thick, chipped, dirty. After so much night writing, his right thumb and first three fingers were black with crayon wax. The pinky edge of his hand was gray with news ink. Like always, those hands were truthful. And now
They shook. They shook, damn them. Another something screamed as it whomped his wall. He'd had it. Onto the porch, Earl, the old dog. The shack might as well be hung a mile in the air. He couldn't see earth, not even the foot of his own damn steps. He and the dog stood there, and they sniffed. To Earl's thinking, morning smelled a little like fire, a little, not a lot. What the hell, he thought. I'm near 90. Near 90 and afraid, Christ! And something else whomped the back of the shack. A big flapping followed. The old dog leaned, trembled against Earl's leg. Christ! Earl gave the animal a shove with his knee. Ought to take you and shoot you, you old bastard. Dog, afraid ain't useful. The old dog waddled toward the gray morning. He stretched his neck, took one step from the porch into the mist, and then another. Suddenly its body jerked. He sounded one long, howling note that curdled into a growl and flopped backward to where Earl stood. Dog song echoed from the day. Now this was a good old dog, lazy on its porch, but one to fly, flapping ears and jowls, singing into the trees and off the trail in long-legged strides, ahead of roaring trucks, charging junkers, bouncing after game, running the night, unafraid of tires, guns, or the tearing death of tooth or claw, this old dog. Now, this old bastard tucked its head and whimpered into the shack. Another thump on the back wall, another scream, more flapping from the mist, screams echoing inside. The old dog simpered. Now, what the hell, Earl said. The world smelled, stank a little like outhouse, something of old oil and gas, the way them old fish boats by Egg Harbor smelled. And something else hung on the bottom of those stinks. What the hell, Earl said. Then it came. The day smelled, damn it if it didn't, the day smelled like sex. Once he caught hold of that, Earl reeled it in. Damn, if it wasn't the biggest part of the morning, the thick odor like that place women had. He remembered that damn much about it all. You old shit, he said to the hound. What good's a dog afraid of a little pussy? The dog shuffled deeper into the shack, away from the open door. The flapping from the back sounded like a woman shaking a wet sheet for drying. 2, 3 wet sheets, a dozen wet sheets. Another thud and more out of the noise from both sides of the place. A stream of birds came running, reaching for the air, big birds and small. With them came fox, coon, squirrel, possum, all together swarming around the shack, flowing past, over his roof, his porch, and into the fog, all away from the woods. Jesus Christ, Earl said. Later, he tried to write down the sounds they made, birds so scared they forgot air had buildings and trees in it. Squirrels so frightened they'd run with fox or cat, critters as would eat them standing still or on the run, all the cries so terrible as to frighten a chase hound. The broken, flapping birds were the worst. Later he wrote, "No birds, but birds'll be the last." A minute after, he calculated fish might be last to go, but he didn't bother writing it down. Earl stepped off the damn porch. 2 paces, and the shack was a gray smear in the blank white day. Man could lose himself, step from his own damn porch, he said. Having said it, he realized it was true. Earl rooted inside among piles of papers, stacks of dirty dishes, pots and forks, pans and cans, through stinking clothes he'd meant to wash, the radio in pieces all over, under the yards and yards of plastic tarp. He tossed aside tools, wire,
pistons and rods, rooted among boxes, bottles, engine parts. He finally found the rope, the good yellow stuff, the kind the electric men used to stay the power poles over by the highway, 200 feet coiled neat. He tied one end to the porch post, the other around his gut. Then he stepped down and onto the sand again. "Still like wading water," he thought. "Wading running tide," he said. The shack disappeared behind him. Alone in the mist, he played out the rope, trudging through the giving sand to the forest. Behind, small critters still whomped his home from time to time. They cried pain, they shouted terror, then they fled. What the hell he was doing, he didn't know, but he felt the need to look. Felt he ought to be on the trail, into the woods. Whatever strangeness was here, it had come from the sky. Now it was in his patch of wood this foggy morn. He had maybe 40, maybe 50 feet of nylon rope still on the coil, when screams, 1,000 of them, echoed from the mists. Some near, some distant, the screams held 1,000 terrors, all pain, all on the move toward him. A breeze stirred the sex stink a little bit. The air cleared enough to let him see the opening in the forest wall, a place darker in the gray. Through the fog, it seemed a mile, seemed, but it was close. Earl squinted against the day, against his age, against disbelief. Ahead, the forest floor moved toward him. Out of the screaming woods and rustling brush, the sand rippled like waves on a still pond. In slow, slow motion, the wave front crested, breaking toward him, almost frozen, almost, but not. The wave's breath came on the breeze, rotted meat and dirty sex. The sand breathed on him. It was the sand that screamed, the 1,000, the 1,000,000 tiny voices, the sand and the things the sand was eating. The sand said 1,000,000,000 times above the hissing flow of coming tide. From the trees, Earl's dog, the other, the young one, that had been hunting yesterday, last night, when the thing came down. Now the young, the stupid animal, came crawling, dragging its ass end. Earl watched the damn animal haul itself from the pines. It reached where the wave crested, then collapsed, rolled head over ass, then stopped. Stuck, sinking in the rippling sand, stopped. It devoted itself to screams. From the shack, the old dog returned the call. Whole thing took a minute, and at the end, the dog was gone. For a few seconds it struggled, seemed to sink, sink slow like a boat oozing under the water. When the hound rolled over, it was dead and no longer screaming, but it continued to writhe. Made lively by the action of the chewing sand, argued over by so many tiny mouths. The dog went side up first, then belly up, ribs like teeth. Earl saw no legs, no more hind end and belly. The thing was body cavity and bone, spilling, unwinding guts, dissolving flesh and blood, seeping into the sand. And the sand drank, the sand ate. The dog melted like a block of ice in summer. It was summer, and soon gone. A minute. Earl wrote, "Sand come from out of space." He wrote, but knew that wasn't right. Sand may be made alive by... He held the crayon above the page of the Toms River Sentinel. It shook. He couldn't figure what to say. What made the sand alive? He wrote, "That star fucked us, sure." That seemed as good an answer as any. Fucked the earth and made it live. He was writing on the picture of the astronauts back from the moon, sitting in their little isolation trailer, talking with the president through the window. Astronauts smiling. And when the morning stopped screaming, the mists cleared some. The rippling wave folded closer to Earl. He backed away, kept a good 20 or 30 feet of still earth between the living, rolling sand and his own damn self. The day had cleared enough to let him see a little. Even so, he followed the yellow rope, wound it around his arm, back to the cabin, onto his porch. He hugged his porch post, the post he'd raised in the Great Depression. The sand waved, stopped a couple 3 yards from his steps. It murmured, waiting, waiting. The world stewed and hissed, a pot set to simmer. He heard more than saw through the thinning fog, but the forest was moving, creaking, cracking. Trees, a few, fell. Then more. They fell, rolled, tore the brush crackling in its own dissolving ways. He pictured the pines falling, upended, rolling, sinking, eaten like his dog. The wind blew and the fog tore to shreds around him. With the blowing wind, Earl got a little of himself eaten. A grain of sand on the wind, some grit to the eye, that and nothing more. Nothing unusual in the barrens. He blinked, wiped the corner of his eye, like always, and then from deep inside him, the familiar pain grew new teeth. White heat screamed. It grabbed the side of his head. Fire flashed, a bright needle inside his eye. One grain, but it ate fast. It ate hungry, ate fuller than he could have thought. That thinking came, was written down later. Of course, later. In the moment, the pain dropped him to his knees. He fell, hands first, on his porch. By the time he'd wiped the grain away, the eye jelly was gobbled, the lid poked through, ate out, and that part of his seeing was gone, gone for good. Later, the sand wave swept forward, slowly, running like molasses in January. It wrapped the shack. It rolled on. Later. Later, he wrapped his head in the torn parts of his last clean shirt, took to wearing the goggles he'd kept when he junked that Indian motorcycle back in 1942. He wrapped and taped himself inside the plastic tarp. That's when he wrote, "Hell, there's something gotta kill you. Might as well be this." And that was as true as anything he'd ever written down. Later, the car came out of the silence, banged and screamed, a strange and alien thing on metal rims, the tires eaten, gone. The engine banged near death, over-racing, coughing, threatening a stall, but kicking sand every which way, spraying the tiny teeth into the air. "Sand eats rubber!" he yelled. "Reckon you know that, though," he said to himself. The car folks stayed put, yelling, but stayed put. Earl wore his new plastic suit and brick shoes out the door, bricks wrapped to his feet with yellow plastic rope. He whisked the windborne sand mouths off the porch with a flail of frayed tether. The car's windows were near gone, pitted and holed like cheese. "Now the glass, it turns to sand," Earl yelled. Shreds of nylon tent covered the holes where the windows had gone over. "Well, I guess you found that one out, too," Earl said. In the car, the people screamed. Earl couldn't see who was left. "Where to go? What to do? What, for God's sakes, to do? How do we get out of here?" They all screamed at once. "Give us gas," someone inside yelled. "Pour some gas and we'll take you too," someone yelled. Earl thought it was the man, but who knew? The yelling was so shrill. "Sure," Earl yelled. "Well, I gotta charge you, though." He laughed at that.
"Help us. For God's sake, help us."
It was another voice. It was the woman's, maybe. Maybe the girl's. He couldn't see with his one good eye and the fading light and the pitted plastic lens of the cycle goggles.
"Where you gone?" he called across the sand. "Where's out of here when the whole world's going over?"
please.
It was a squeaky boy's voice, then again, louder, the squeak rising through a scream of please.
Well, the gash is there, son. Earl pointed to the drum.
It sat where it had the day before and for 50 years on its stone base.
Go help yourselves. It's a day after holiday special, he called across the clear.
He felt a needle sting as a couple of pissed-off mouths nibbled at his nose. He swatted where they bit. He scraped them away, leaving a little trail of blood across his glove.
Fill her up, he yelled.
Couldn't help laughing at the thought. He laughed again. The family danced in the dying car, yelling to him, to themselves, to the world. Earl wondered what was going on, being decided behind those tent flaps. Who'd sacrifice? That's it, he said aloud to himself. That's it. I bet you're figuring, now, how far can we get on this tank? Or you're thinking, how long can I last? How much gas can I dip and pour till they eat me to the knees, huh? Earl didn't figure the sausage-fingered man to give himself up for eating.
Send the boy! Earl yelled.
And then what? He said, but he said it quiet and to himself. He was wondering how damn desperate the folks were. He stood by to watch. Earlier, he calculated why he was uneaten. He'd built on piles of rock. Back in the Great Depression, he built his shack just right, kept sill beams off the ground, so he sat on old granite now, watching the sand eat the living earth away. Oh, it was eating the cabin now. He couldn't miss that. He could hear it at the wood. The sand was resting, but when the wind stirred, it flew, where each grain nested on something living or something once alive, a log, a blade of grass, or a critter. The sand ate, and didn't fill. He wrote down,
nick, 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 a billion times already. Billions more to go.
Earl watched through the day, and when the sun sat on the western sawtooth ridge of trees, the sand began to stir again.
You're waking up for night, he wrote.
The wave began to ripple, to murmur. Not a bird, not a bee, not a critter moved on earth that Earl could see. Just ground itself, gnawing, crawling on its mouths. Earl dozed, downing whiskey to kill the pain in his eye, his head. He slept, not well, but hard, and he woke alone.
Dog gone, he wrote.
Then he laughed. Brick shoes, now that was smart, he reckoned. Keeping windrift sand off his floor out of the way became impossible. There was too much wind, and the sand too small. The plastic tarp he wrapped himself in wore as he walked, let some seep in, and when it came, it ate on his feet. Finally, he got the notion. Put something between him and the ground, something sand didn't eat. Bricks, he figured, bricks would work. Knocked a couple off the base of his kerosene heater, and that was it. Fine as frog fur. And from then to the end of the world, Earl walked, clumping, thud, thud, thud. From his porch in sundown light, Earl kept watch. The damn car never drove off, never tried. No one got out, no one tried to fill the tank. The thing sat, revving every now and then, every so often. The inside screamed. Sometimes the screams were at him, and sometimes not. Every so often the car shook and shimmied as though someone inside was dancing, fighting, humping. Sundown. The car went still. The engine chugged through the last of the light. With the crawl of shadows, it coughed once or twice, raced again, and then shuddered still. Earl listened. There was a voice inside, one. It was crying. Earl took a last sip of Jim Beam. "Go on home now," he said. "Go on home." And he tossed the bottle to the sand. Not light enough now to see, but he heard. Heard the whisper of the sand, the urgent chatter of the glass as it shivered into a billion parts, the parts making friends with the sand. The voice from the car kept crying. In an hour, it screamed. Loud. The screams went on for a minute or two, maybe three. Earl's clock had stopped. But then the car went quiet. Later, he listened to the trees, their noises as they fell. Soon after he was gone, Earl figured, pretty soon after, he figured, the trees, they'd be gone too. Fuck 'em, he figured. Damn trees tried to put his eye out, tried to trip him all his years of wandering the forest. They'd tried to crush him when he felled them. Had been the mothers of splinters and burning faggots and broken chairs, and trees had tried to get him all his life, and they had failed. And they might outlive him now, but not by much. Grass, cranberry, sphagnum moss, fern, other living shit, that'd all go down the mouths. Fuck the trees and the horse they rode in on, he wrote it down. Almost the last thing. For a second, he thought about being buried. Then he laughed. World swallows you anyway. Might as well like this, he wrote. That was the last. Earl looked up. The wind picked up, blew through the holes where once the windows were. The grain scoured the wood. He shuffled the plastic tarp around him tighter. He kept them out as long as he could. He looked to the noise above, the roof crackling like small arms fire. Pieces fell, dissolving as they fell. Through the holes, the stars shone bright. In the chomping night, he pictured the world. The whole damn world spread below him, like he was one of them astronauts. A real one. A real, for Christ's sake, astronaut, a real traveler in the outer space. He and the sands were real astronauts. In his mind's eye, Earl saw the world. He looked down on it like the papers said the astronauts in space had done. In his mind's eye, Earl watched Earth shrivel, die. All the living, all that was growing green and climbing, all the critters, the people, he watched it shiver and go down, rolling in the sand like that dumb young dog of his. He watched it all go down the tiny mouths. How many grains of sand was there? All around the world, how many tiny mouths? From where Earl sat, wrapped in plastic, tethered to his shack, peering from his goggles, breathing slow, he saw the world reshape, flatten, in his mind's eye, looking down. Damnation! He hoped that would be the way. Everyone gone when he was gone. Folks from Philadelphia, Buster Leek, Cap Haney, the pickers he hired in the harvest, all them gone after. Oh, he hoped. And when it came, the pain was pure lousy. Soon it ended, in just a minute, maybe two. Hi, this is Larry Santoro. I wrote the story you just heard, So Many Tiny Mouths, and I just thought I'd give you some idea of what was behind the writing of this piece. I did a short article on it when the story was first published in the United States in an online publication, now, alas, gone, called Feral Fiction. And it just explains a bit about the Pine Barrens and a little bit about me and why I wrote this story. If it's of any interest to you, here it is. To begin with, we need to know a little bit about me. I was born in Pennsylvania, and this begins in about 1950-something or another. Summers, my parents and I used to hop into the old man's green over cream 53 Bel Air hardtop and point the grill toward the pre-Donald Trump Atlantic City. We'd make the Delaware crossing into Jersey on the Chester Bridgeport Ferry, and about 2 hours later, our first half dozen layers of winter skin would have roasted into a kind of sweaty peel, and we'd have yanked a year's fillings out of our head with Steel Pier's saltwater taffy. But before becoming beach blanket brisket, we always had to cross inland Jersey, of course. I used to spend those 70-plus non-air-conditioned miles in the old man's Chevy's back seat, meditating on horrors like undertow or on skewering my bare feet on the beach's first horseshoe crabs of summer. And being thus occupied, it wasn't until years later that I noticed that most of Jersey was trees, and our highway to the shore was just a corridor of pines. Later, I learned that those 70-some-odd miles, the whole of central Jersey, in fact, was a sort of geopolitical entity called the Pine Barrens, as explained by my elder and much smarter cousin Fred, who eventually became an FBI agent. The Barrens were a dark forest land inhabited by strange six-fingered folk who lived in wildwood caves and who prayed to odd, grubby gods and made their own gas from pig shit. And they ate lost travelers. They called themselves Pineys. Much later, I made a now long-gone, thankfully, documentary film about the region called Where the Sun Never Shines. We won't think about that too much. And I found the Pineys, sadly, to be plain old garden variety Americans, and I'll let your personal demons inform whatever image that concept conjures. But Pineys are independent-minded people. They don't care to be fussed over about where they live. They do a lot for themselves, things most of us gave up doing a generation or more ago. That about pig shit and gas, by the way, it is true. Their tales are curious and spooky. Well, of course they are. Their world is a deep forest and truck-wide sand trails. It's got small streams, cedar swamps, abandoned bogs, the smell of decay and sphagnum moss. It's quite wonderful. Off highways, a stranger to the region navigates by compass, odometer, and a geodetic survey map clutched tightly in his hand. Places dot these maps called things like Ong's Hat, Goshen, Hog Wallow, and silence lives in these invisible towns. A sense of the once was and never will be just hangs in those clearings. And the shallow hollows that once were home, stores, and places, any stranger who's arrived at one of those named spots in the map and who stands at a 5-point wideness in the trail, swings his eyes four ways into that old, old darkness around, feels the lurk of the strange behind him or ahead. Well, someday I'll get that all right. There are economic, political, and social reasons why the Barrens, despite squatting at the beating concrete heart of the megalopolis, remains a green and relatively human-free and unimproved place. These reasons are not part of this tale's fetchings, though, so the point is, I liked the area. I admired the people, and despite the arrogance of youth, I actually learned a little bit about them. And another thing I learned, it's a very hard place to get right. My film, for example, never caught it. Later, I set another story there. It's called Veterans. Later still, having sold two screenplays, bing, bing, like that, I adapted my story for film, but Veterans the movie remains unproduced, and worse, it was never sold. One supremely good writer I know set a story there. He missed it. One of the episodes of The Sopranos, one of the best episodes they did, was set there. The producers, city-bred wise guys, though, they were money on as strangers in a strange land, but their film, The Barrens, shot in some generic woodland with no spirit of the pines, lost the chill of that place. When I was asked to submit to an anthology of tales on a theme of, I think it was fang and claw, fang and talon, something like that, the pines somehow entered my head again, and I guess I just wanted to get another shot at getting it right. So, okay, I thought, the salient features of the Barrens are trees, sand, and what could I do? Trees with claws was a kind of cliché, but sand with teeth? Well, maybe. Anyway, the anthology editors passed on So Many Tiny Mouths. They were right, too. The version that I produced back then focused on the tourists from Philly. I guess I was still sitting in the back seat of my dad's Chevy, so here it is. Rethought, So Many Tiny Mouths. I got out and listened to some of the people I halfway knew when I shot that forgotten film down there. Ghosts. And I hope I got 'em right. Oh, by the way, Earl Suey, the coot through whose eyes we watch the world end, he's fiction. Just a coincidence. No, really. Just a coincidence. Enjoy the story.